brothers and sisters. Our second study in the book of Proverbs tonight has a slightly more personal edge to it. A few weeks ago we looked at man's relationship to God, and God willing, later in the year, we will conclude by looking at man's relationship to others. And while both these subjects can contain some personal points, looking at scripture involving man's relationship to himself is always going to throw up more than the odd conscience-pricking point. There will, of course, also be some strong links to the first study and verses that overlap. But ultimately, all this is relevant, and particularly, as ever, completely relevant to our current everyday lives. Now, to make the point that Proverbs has something to say about tonight's subject heading would be something of an understatement. There were well over 100 references and cross-references, and had I dug any deeper, then I'm sure that figure could have doubled. And this is not simply down to the book reiterating points, as it so often does, but more like fitting life's ways and experiences, feelings and emotions, rights and wrongs, into exactly the kind of format we should be able to take note of. And if a particular point needs repeating, even if worded differently, it will be repeated. No excuse for us missing any points, then, is what we may think. But if missing the point in Scripture isn't a problem for us, we can all be sure that applying the point sometimes is. As individuals, each one of us is more than used to being made to feel a little uncomfortable about ourselves when looking into Scripture. That can, as mentioned earlier, prick the conscience. But this, of course, is not an exercise in making us feel bad about ourselves tonight. The first verse of Proverbs chapter 28 reads, and I'll just say before I go on that I will have to be jumping out quite a lot with references, so don't feel you have to try and keep up. The first verse of Proverbs chapter 28 reads, "The wicked flee when no one pursues, but the righteous are as bold as a lion." Now, while we may not feel so very righteous all of the time, we do have the right to feel as bold as lions. For we find ourselves in the privileged position of holding such information in our Bibles that is without question for the good of us all. What is more, we can read this life-saving information as much and as many times as we like, or maybe as much as our consciences will take in places. As we said earlier, there should be little excuse for us to miss any points made, particularly when directed at man himself, which of course Proverbs is very good at. The simple, direct language throughout many of the chapters is surely of great assistance. So when looking at the relationship of man to himself, where better to start than by looking at something that emerges in each person from an early age? We would each hope to know our own characters as a rule, and people are often recognised by character too. How often do we hear, "Oh, she's a lovely person," or, "Oh yes, he's such a good bloke"? These generally are people's overall observations of someone's character. And although it is a bit sketchy, that is the impression made. Proverbs 20 verse 11 reads, "Even a child is known by his deeds, whether what he does is pure and right." So from an early age, man's character can be recognised. And though it will bend and change over time with age and life's experiences, that initial trait will generally remain somewhere within us. But character is not just something for any man to be recognised by. and whether good or bad, it is something that constantly needs checking, working on, and in some cases changing. And there are certainly things that we will dislike and wish to change when recognising our own personal characters. But it is also something that is so very important for us when we have chosen to walk the path that we do. You could say that our characters at certain times can come under closer scrutiny from inside and outside our circle than might be normal. This, though, should not be seen as a disadvantage, rather a vital tool in demonstrating to others what we are about. The importance of entwining as much as possible of what we believe and live our lives by into our character is something that is never too late or too early to begin. To begin doing. Proverbs 3 and verse 3. Let not mercy and truth forsake you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. And in chapter 10, verse 9. He who walks with integrity walks securely, but he who perverts his ways will become known. Inner feelings, good or bad, will always at some point manifest themselves outwardly. And to some extent, this is our character coming out. And it is this that gives our reflection to others. Now, though not personally, I've witnessed the kind of thing we're talking about firsthand at work. All it took was a negative side of character by someone who attends church and claims to have a faith. First the jokes, then disbelief, and finally the sneers. This is probably what should be expected, and the reaction in some ways can be understood. But it can be a harsh lesson, and one myself I was only too grateful to learn as a bystander. Proverbs 27, verse 17. As iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. We see here that character building is by no means something purely to be achieved single-handed. Without realising it, as we talk, study, sing, worship and socialise as a group, we are improving our characters to the point where it will and does outwardly show, and not just among ourselves. Again, every person's character is made up of many different parts, but it is the way these parts come together and reflect themselves in life that's important. Not only do the points raised in Proverbs reflect on the relationship of man to himself, equally they point out and demonstrate the important parts that make up character. The merits of self-control are something often shown in the Proverbs, and the dangers of laziness are regularly used to highlight the points of that self-control that is a testing part of our everyday lives. For without it, things can soon go very off track. So that little voice in the back of our mind that says, "Don't do that," or "Don't say that," need to be switched on at all times. We read in Proverbs 25:28, "Whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls." An apt description of what it feels like to let that wrong thought or temptation successfully overcome us. And chapter 16 and verse 32 highlights the alternative. "He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city." What we can take from this is that to effectively use self-control is no easy thing. But if achieved, the feeling is satisfying if consistency in this is found. I'm sure at one time or another we would have all felt pleased with ourselves, even maybe a bit triumphant at having overcome a temptation with self-control. It feels good to do that. But to do it consistently is more pleasing. And that's when it gets hard for us. When achieving self-control, we might think of it as maybe a football manager would, whose team has just won or lost a game. Forget about that one and move on to the next. This challenge is ever present for us, and our failures should always be enough to keep our feet on the ground. A couple of verses in Romans reiterate the task we face. Paul's words in chapter 7 and verse 18 read, "For I know that in me, that is, in my flesh, nothing good dwells. For to will is present with me, but how to perform what is good I do not find. For the good that I will to do, I do not do, but the evil I will not to do, that I practice. Now if I do not what I will not to do, it is no longer I who do it, but sin that dwells in me." As mentioned earlier, laziness is often used in Proverbs in the context of self-control, and at times, sizable chunks of chapters are dedicated to this. But if we were to change the word self-control for the word discipline, without changing the meaning, it becomes a little plainer to see what the scripture involving laziness points to. It is, after all, a charge no one likes to have laid at their door. But if true, has no fewer consequences than any other lack in self-control or discipline. A well-known passage appears in chapter 6 and beginning at verse 6 in Proverbs. "Go to the ant, you sluggard, consider her ways and be wise, which having no captain, overseer or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you slumber, O sluggard? When will you rise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall your poverty come on you like a prowler, and your need like an armed man." On spotting an ant, many of us will probably recall these verses, and rightly so, for there cannot be many better examples of such industry and diligent work. And while we may not feel we have anything to fear from this warning and possible outcome, it is a clear reminder for man to be on his guard. And elsewhere in Proverbs, we read the same kind of message. Proverbs 10 verse 4 reads, "He who has a slack hand becomes poor, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. He who gathers in summer is a wise son, and he who sleeps in harvest is a son who causes shame." Also in Proverbs 13 and verse 4, "The soul of a lazy man desires and has nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made rich." And finally, verse 4 and 13 of chapter 20. "The lazy man will not plough because of winter. He will beg during harvest and have nothing. Do not sleep, lest you come to poverty. Open your eyes, and you will be satisfied with bread." And we could continue on like this for verse after verse if we had time. We may note that poverty and hunger often appear when laziness is mentioned, but this does not indicate that they are evils. In God's eyes, of course, all men are equal, we know this. And it is clear here that while laziness can lead a man to poverty, it is by no means the general cause. just before we move on, there was a cross-reference that led me to Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 4, which seemed to sum up some things up from a slightly different angle, particularly when reading a note on the following verses. It's Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 4. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. As you do not know what is the way of the wind, or how the bones grow in the womb of her who is with child, so you do not know the works of God who makes everything. In the morning sow your seed, and in the evening do not withhold your hand. For you do not know which will prosper, either this or that, or whether both alike will be good. Truly the light is sweet, and it is pleasant for the eyes to behold the sun. But if a man lives many years and rejoices in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. All that is coming is vanity. And the note at the bottom of my page for that verse reads, "The world is full of things over which one has no control, including the purposes of God. There is no virtue to be had in wishful wanderings, but there is hope for those who get busy and do their work." We have spoken of poverty, but what of the opposite, man's wealth? A very popular topic in today's society, I think we'd agree. And in the Proverbs, many of the verses referring to this not only point out the short-lived happiness and lifespan that wealth brings, but also the better scenarios that are available in life without it. For example, in the following verses, chapter 15, verse 16 reads, "Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure with trouble." And 16, verse 16, "How much better to get wisdom than gold, and to get understanding is to be chosen rather than silver." And moving on to the next chapter in verse 1. "Better is a dry morsel with quietness than a house full of feasting with strife." A verse that is almost the repeat from chapter 15. "Better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a fatted calf with hatred." And we are, of course, under no illusions as to the dangers of wealth, or rather, seeking it out. There are no doubt many forms of wealth, and one that we might connect with today is retaining a certain standard of living. We often acknowledge how blessed we are to live where we do and have the lives we live. But does this come at some cost to ourselves? We are, after all, not immune to taking full advantage of what we are able to have in life. Naturally, we have to work for this, but it is sometimes a thin line between working for necessity and working because we have to keep up a standard of living that only we ourselves have set. This is not always easily recognisable today either, as it is a fact that we are all generally working harder than ever before, right across society. Proverbs 23 and verse 4. "Do not work to be over-rich, because of your own understanding, cease. Will you set your eyes on that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away like an eagle toward heaven." And in Proverbs 27:24, "For riches are not forever, nor does a crown endure to all generations." It is only by taking great care and diligence with what we have and can have that keeps any lines from becoming blurred. Also keeping in mind that there are as many vices in riches as there are in poverty. Having too much can lead to dependence on ourselves. Having too little could lead to the way of the sluggard and temptation. what we have got, we have been given. And in being able to work for something, we have also been given. Chapter 30 and verse 8 of Proverbs. Remove falsehood and lies far from me. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food allotted to me, lest I be full and deny you, and say, "Who is the Lord?" Or lest I be poor and steal, and profane the name of my God. To wear oneself out working for wealth is not only simply a waste of time in the long run, but also utterly disheartening. And we remember Christ's words, for where your treasure is there your heart is also. Now, something that we may also associate with riches is pride. We will all recognise the saying, "Pride comes before a fall," and I suspect this originated from the Proverbs, possibly 16 verse 18. But it is earlier in the chapter where we read of God's attitude to proudness. Reading from verse 1. The preparations of the heart belong to man, but the answer of the tongue is from the Lord. All the ways of man are pure in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the spirits. Commit your works to the Lord, and your thoughts will be established. The Lord has made all for himself, yes, even the wicked, for the day of doom. Everyone proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Though they join forces, none will go unpunished. Man's pride, and with it boastfulness, has been a stumbling block for humankind for as long as he has walked the earth. The failure to compliment God with his ways and achievements is almost second nature today, and is as easy to pick out as it is to hear. How often do we hear proud boasts of what has been done, what can be done, and what will be done tomorrow? Pride at its worst can be one of the least attractive traits in any person. Chapter 27 and verse 1 reads, "Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth. Let another man praise you, and not your own mouth, a stranger, and not your own lips." Proudness should not be confused with taking pride in something, though, as often this can lead to better results when trying to achieve something, and we will all do this at some point or daily. The secret, of course, is to remember how and why we can achieve good results in any task. The book of Micah, chapter 6 and verse 8 says, "God has shown you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God." And again, back in the Proverbs, in 11, verse 2. "When pride comes, then comes shame, but with the humble is wisdom." For proudness or boasting to be expressed, though, it will most often be from the mouth. That part of the body where the greatest good or the greatest harm can come. In a world where we seem to be able to communicate with everything but our mouths, it has lost none of its use as one of the most powerful tools we will ever have, and possibly the most dangerous. The trouble being, it will often start up before we want it to, and the off button can be difficult to find at times. Chapter 18 and verse 21. "Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit." The message is even more dramatic in the Epistle of James, chapter 3, reading from verse 5. Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how a great forest a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature. And it is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. In every part of life, our speech will at some point let us down, or help to do good. But it is not always how much we use it that is important. As we read in Proverbs 10 and starting at verse 18. Whoever hides hatred has lying lips, and whoever spreads slander is a fool. In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking, but he who restrains his lips is wise. So in other words, the less we say, the smaller the chance of uttering the wrong thing. Verse 20, the tongue of the righteous is choice silver, the heart of the wicked is worth little. The lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die of lack of wisdom. Now as a community we know how our own speech is important among ourselves, and the positives and negatives that come from it. Words can build up, but also knock down. They can soothe, but hurt as well. Encourage or discourage. Cause happiness and laughter, but also sadness and tears. We will by no means ever master the skill of absolute correct speech, but as always, learn from our mistakes. Proverbs 16, verse 23. The heart of the wise teaches his mouth and adds learning to his lips. Pleasant words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the bones. And also in chapter 15 and verse 1. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise uses knowledge rightly, but the mouth of fools pours forth foolishness. And verse 23. A man has joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, how good it is. We can also look to the New Testament and the words of Christ as he scolded the Pharisees in Matthew 12 and verse 34. It is Christ's clear explanation here that really highlights the importance of our point about speech. 12 verse 34. Brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good man, out of the good treasure of his heart, brings forth good things. And an evil man, out of the evil treasure, brings forth evil things. But I say to you, that every idle word men may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. Man's speech may not just be one of those cases. Man's speech, sorry, may just be one of those cases where we say less is more. And if every man is judged by his words, we do have little room for error. For as Jesus' words explain, we are effectively revealing the state of our hearts. Proverbs once more, and 10 verse 19. In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking, but he who restrains his lips is wise. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver. The heart of the wicked is worth little. And the choice silver here refers to the good words which are scarce and precious and hold much value. Another point that can be drawn into this category is feelings of anger. What are the most common and natural ways man will express himself? In the context of what we have just looked at involving speech, to suppress feelings and words of anger can be difficult at any time. In expressing itself, there is little difference from joyful or happy feelings that, of course, are just as difficult to hold in, though they too can sometimes have their time and place. Paul's words in Ephesians 4 verse 26 say, "Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath." A slight variation on a verse from Psalms. From this chapter and these words, the positive or negative side of anger very much depends on its motivation. We remember Jesus' anger twice as he cleansed the temple of those who were misusing it. The motivation for this would have been nothing but love for his Father and commitment to righteous behaviour. And this is something I think we can recognise very well. It is something we do. It is not unusual for us to get stirred up and express our anger at something that has been said or done that goes completely against everything we believe. And I've done it with people face to face in this very hall when discussing an item we have heard maybe on the radio or seen on the television. We could in some way call it a defensive anger that we feel. And if unselfish and based on complete love for God and others, surely this cannot be discouraged. Providing, of course, we do not let this righteous anger turn to bitterness, and setting it to one side by the end of the day, as the scripture says. But we still have to overcome the difficulty of expressing anger in more general ways. Throughout Proverbs, the negative effect of doing this is spoken about. But many of the verses, as ever, give the positive alternative. Chapter 15 and verse 1. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a hard word stirs up anger. The tongue of the wise uses knowledge rightly, but the mouth of fools pours forth foolishness. And moving on to verse 18. A wrathful man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger allays contention. A verse we read earlier, verse 32 in chapter 16. He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. And again towards the end of the book, chapter 29, verse 8. Scoffers set a city aflame, but wise men turn away wrath. And in verse 22, an angry man stirs up strife, and a furious man abounds in transgression. And that verse 8 of chapter 29 is almost another repeat of chapter 15 and verse 18. A wrathful man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger allays contention. This is surely where we should be drawing our lesson from. For we know that very rarely will getting hot-headed about something bring a peaceful situation or solution. Again, we are not immune to having to maybe deal with these kind of feelings among ourselves. It will happen. But having the forethought to deal with anger, whether that is to suppress it or express it in a certain way, is something we have to work hard at. But we would surely agree this is not and should not be impossible to achieve. The motivation is there for us in Scripture. and teaches in no uncertain terms. It's again Proverbs 20 and verse 3. It is honourable for a man to stop striving, since any fool can start a quarrel. In chapter 17, verse 14. The beginning of strife is like releasing water. Therefore, stop contention before a quarrel starts. And it's this that really brings us full circle to where we began, talking about that inner and outer character of man and that relationship to himself. We read earlier from Proverbs 3 and verse 3, let not mercy and truth forsake you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. The virtues of mercy, kindness and truth so often desert man today. But it is exactly these godly characteristics that should be strived for. They should be a part of us for all to see outwardly and as a driving force inwardly. Proverbs 11 verse 17. The merciful man does good for his own soul, but he who is cruel troubles his own flesh. Mercy, or shall we say kindness, should come naturally to us. We gain a great amount from being kind, though it can just be the happiness or comfort it brings to others that causes this. But as chapter 25 and verse 21 point out, man is not to be choosy about where kindness is directed. 25 verse 21. If your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat. And if he is thirsty, give him water to drink. For so you will heap coals of fire on his head, and the Lord will reward you. And it was this verse that made me think of the times where we may have hurt, upset, or had an argument maybe with someone. How often will we do something to diffuse this if we're at fault? Maybe a bunch of flowers, a box of chocolates, or a card. It usually has the hopeful effect, doesn't it? As metals are melted by placing fiery coals on them, so can the heart of someone who we have had a disagreement with, so can their heart be if kindness is demonstrated. Paul, in his epistle to the Romans, repeats this proverb nearly word for word in chapter 12 and verse 20, and closes in verse 21 by saying, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. We would never wish to bring shame on anyone, but to break a cycle of hate and or animosity in someone, the way suggested is surely the easiest one, if we too are able to take that all-important step forward. This will of course in itself require a state of mind prepared to react in the right and proper way. All we need to remember to ask is, what should my natural instinct be? But man's relationship to himself is no science. The self-control needed that we spoke of earlier practically underpins everything we have looked at tonight. Without it, building the kind of necessary character we can read of throughout the Proverbs will be even harder than it is already. But this is not a new subject of study or learning for us by any means. The kind of character building necessities we have found have already been tried, tested, and completed by a man who we daily meditate on. Nothing we have looked at tonight is not involved in our regular meditation of Jesus. We have just spoken about the importance of kindness. And every Sunday we meet and remember the greatest act of kindness, if that is not too soft a word, that a man has ever shown. His whole life on earth was a demonstration of his character, his speech, his self-control. He took pride in his father's work, and his work rate was relentless. He had no wealth, but gave fully of everything his father had given him, and demanded no more. In relationship to ourselves, we have one chance to grab hold of life's opportunities. We have the assistance from books like Proverbs to gather the information and to learn from. And as chapter 10 and verse 5 reads, "He who gathers in summer is a wise son, and he who sleeps in harvest is a son who causes shame." As the harvest is nearly upon us, brethren and sisters, let us gather in all we can, prepare our characters, work on our relationship within ourselves, so that we are ready for that so longed for harvest of the earth.